Hello and welcome to another episode of BTS by the Book, a podcast that explores BTS through books about them, one chapter at a time. As always, I am your host, the BTS Bookworm. You may have recognized a few seconds from the song that introduced our episode, No, capital N, period O, which has a direct tie-in to the chapter of the day. Specifically, it's the first track or song mentioned, and only a few are mentioned in this entire chapter because of the nature of the topic, basically. As most of you know, typically we will only consider books that, from cover to cover, deal in some way with BTS. Those are the only books we'll look at and chapters contained within such books. I'm making an exception for this episode because a brand new book was released this month, September 2021, by a fairly academic publisher called Routledge. As a university librarian, I'm familiar with Routledge. They do a lot of good, solid academic book publishing. And one of their latest releases is called The Soft Power of the Korean Wave, subtitled Parasite, BTS, and Drama. This is an edited work. The editor is named Yuna Kim. There are 15 chapters in the book, and each chapter is written by a different expert. And most of the experts are academic type, people who are researchers and maybe teachers, writers in their various fields. A full third of the book, the first five chapters, deal with the 2019 Korean movie called Parasite. It won some awards, really important awards, had a very global reach, and it was such an important film in terms of the Korean Wave and this soft power being spoken of in the title that a full third of the book is devoted to it. The last third of the book, last five chapters, deal with K-drama, so not one particular series or anything, but K-drama as a whole. And instead of focusing on K-pop in general for the last third of the book, that's the middle five chapters, the editor decided to focus solely on BTS. So we have five chapters to work with here right in the middle of the book, and being academic, solid, research-oriented type chapters, they're very lengthy. And we will do well to just get through one chapter in a given episode. I'll be focusing today on the last of the five chapters that are focused on BTS. By the way, this book is available in hard copy formats and digital formats. You can pick up a copy. I would highly recommend it. I like what I've read so far, especially if your interests are Korean related, bigger than just BTS. You might find this book especially interesting. It is fairly academic, but not in a painful way. Anyway, the book is just shy of 240 pages as a whole. The fifth chapter that focuses on BTS is entitled BTS as Cultural Ambassadors, subtitle K-pop and Korea in Western Media. I'll say more about that title and about the author of that chapter momentarily. I do, as usual, want to read a statement or two from the introduction of the work. This is a very lengthy introduction written by the editor. There is so much content on BTS in the introduction that it would possibly warrant an entire podcast episode at some point. But anyway, so from the section of the intro prior to the part dealing with BTS, we have these lines, and this is a quote. Focusing on the recent phenomenon of Korean popular culture, Parasite, BTS, and drama at this unprecedented historic moment, this book explores the multifaceted meaning of the Korean wave at micro and macro levels and the process of media production, representation, circulation, and consumption in a global context as a distinctive and complex form of soft power. One more line, continue the quote, a country's popular culture as a soft power resource can increase its overall attractiveness and its potential influence on the global stage, albeit in unquantifiable, often commercial, capitalistic, unpredictable, and even paradoxical ways involving both state and non-state actors and international networks in a digitalizing world, end quote. That word digitalizing is a word I'm not that familiar with, but anyway, that was the word used there. In a moment, I plan to try to define soft power for those of you, and I was one of them who wasn't very familiar with that idea when I first encountered this book. The author of this chapter, and I'll be referring to them, the chapters, as essays from time to time because that's how they function. The author is Sarah Keith. She's a senior lecturer in media and music at Macquarie University in Sydney, Australia. The essay is approximately 12 pages long, and again, it is titled BTS as Cultural Ambassadors, subtitled K-pop and Korea in Western Media. Now, before we get into the chapter specifically, I want to read a quote from another source that helps define this idea of soft power. It's a quote from a review of a book by the person who coined the phrase soft power. Joseph Nye was his name. So here's the quote. Coined by Nye in the late 1980s, the term soft power, the ability of a country to persuade others to do what it wants without force or coercion, is now widely invoked in foreign policy debates. Nye argues that successful states need both hard and soft power, the ability to coerce others as well as the ability to shape their long-term attitudes and preferences, end quote. And that it's that last part that defines soft power, the ability to shape long-term attitudes and preferences with no coercion of any kind like you'd find in hard power. Anyway, this chapter opens with an anecdote that seems to hint at the unofficial but definitely real relationship BTS has with Korea and what the author refers to as a, quote, deep entanglement between culture and state, end quote. It involves a social media post from the South Korean president on May 20th, 2018, with which he congratulated BTS for reaching the number one spot on the Billboard 200 chart. Now, this post, a social media post from President Moon, is a hint, seemingly, of recognition that the powers in South Korea recognize and appreciate the benefits of BTS doing well, going abroad, representing the best of Korean culture, and how much the country truly gains from that. It's all a part of this informal, unofficial role BTS has been filling for years as cultural ambassadors. I'm going to keep coming back to those terms, informal, unofficial. That's what a cultural ambassador is all about. And we're going to let the author of this chapter explain that more fully momentarily. The next few paragraphs of the chapter focus on what the author calls, quote, cultural content and, quote, content industries, which involves content like music, movies, television, and how intentional and strategic the promotion of South Korean content has been for several decades, facilitated largely by the Ministry of Culture that now goes by the name Ministry of Culture, Sports, and Tourism. So that sets the stage for most of this chapter essay, the content that a country like Korea can produce and share with the world that actually has people who are representing it, who can function as ambassadors, who are creating this content and sharing this content, taking it out in a global fashion. Musicians in particular are mentioned here early in the chapter, specifically those who've broken through in a big way in Western markets. And some of these specifics are the 2020 SM Town Live World Tour that included concerts in the U.S. and Paris. Girls' Generation from Girls' Generation performance from 2012 on The Late Show with David Letterman. And finally, there's a mention of BTS's performance at the 2017 Billboard Music Awards. So these are three little instances, big instances, I guess. They're big enough to be mentioned specifically of this outreach from Korean artists in Western markets. And according to the author, the Western world has taken notice of these developments and has reported and written about it extensively in sources like the Wall Street Journal, Forbes magazine, and the BBC and all of its publications. And by the way, there are countless references throughout this chapter, all listed in a lengthy references list at the end of the chapter. And that's one reason it has a very academic feel to it. The author does have her own thoughts to share, but so much of it, the majority, is simply her reporting what she's found in various news and magazine-related resources. Since culture is so important to Korea's economy and reputation, by default, musicians in K-pop and actors and creators in K-dramas, for example, bear a lot of responsibility when it comes to representing the country well, serving as cultural ambassadors. And it's unavoidable that those foreign, quote, foreign engagements by K-pop idols are imbued with political significance, end quote. It's unavoidable. They may not have any interest, BTS, for example, in being political or having ties with Korean politics, but it just kind of goes with the territory of being this unofficial type cultural ambassador. Keep in mind that this book, as it currently is, as current as it is, being published in September 2021, it could not have been aware that in July 2021, that there would be an actual official status and title bestowed on BTS by President Moon, calling the group Presidential Envoys. So one of the things that I will bring up a couple of times in this episode is the fact that the author, although she really did her homework, she couldn't have envisioned an official ambassador type role that BTS filled. And I would love to know what the author has to say about this, but there's no way for her to do so, at least not through this chapter. The last two paragraphs of the first part of the chapter explain what the chapter intends to do for the remainder. And I'd like to read a quote pertaining to that to let you hear it from the author's perspective. This chapter, this is a quote, this chapter will explore Western English language media coverage of BTS and how this reveals popular culture as a territory for negotiating and establishing perceptions of Korea. It will furthermore contend that BTS serve as cultural ambassadors for South Korea, fulfilling a specific diplomatic role in a complex way. End quote. And then the last paragraph of this first section explains, based on some research that the author cites, that she believes, and this is due to some research, like I said, that it's only through traditional mass media that you can truly get a feel for the cultural influences that Korean musicians, movies, TV, drama, it's only through traditional mass media that you can get a feel for popular opinion, widespread, mainstream. So in other words, you can't get that truly broad-based mainstream feel through social media, which is interesting because of how much BTS relies on social media. Now, obviously, if your focus was only on the younger generation, those between 10 and 25 or 30, social media is where it's at, you know. But this author's not interested in that. She's interested in the, Western English-speaking media markets as a whole. And so in order to understand that in a mainstream sort of way, the author believes that the research supports looking at traditional mass media instead of social media. And that would include magazines and newspapers in a major way. And so, like it or not, that's what this chapter is going to do. So the citations, and there are many, are going to be taken from newspapers like the New York Times. I would include the Wall Street Journal. It's going to be taken from magazines like Forbes and things like that. So keep in mind, that's where we're heading with this chapter essay. The first section that's titled, has a title to it in the chapter, is titled Adorable Representatives for Youth. And it starts with a statement that suggests that since BTS, as only one group, that's quote, within K-pop, that commands so much attention, it's reasonable to focus only on them with cultural ambassadorship in mind. And the way I would explain that is BTS just by themselves commands so much attention that there's not much of a need to focus on K-pop in general, because you can really, BTS has a way of standing apart separate and apart from K-pop, commanding so much attention on their own. And I think this is the author's way of explaining why the focus is only on them. Now, that statement leads to two full paragraphs of background on the group, including traditional aspects of K-pop that involve its participants being held to, quote, high moral and personal standards in comparison with their counterparts in the West, end quote. And related to that, how K-pop artists are expected to, quote, uphold standards of behavior prescribed by their management agency, television broadcasters, government policies and priorities, and the public, end quote. So this is all an attempt to explain the K-pop context within which BTS has operated. The author's attention then turns to one thing that BTS is especially known for, and that's their pro-social focus and efforts, including the group's focus on, quote, social media and direct-to-fan communication. That involves relatable, this is a quote, relatable, unfiltered, and genuine, end quote, communication, which is contrasted with the, quote, highly stylized and market-ready idols produced by major agencies, end quote, in Korea. These are agencies not named Big Hit, by the way. With this background, there's a lengthy comparison between a BTS, between BTS and a Korean group from the 90s called Seo Taiji and Boys. And both groups, according to the author, produced songs that criticized the educational system. BTS's song No, which we started our episode with, and Seo's Geosil Idea. And I hope I'm pronouncing these terms properly. I'm sorry if I'm not. Both groups critiqued generational norms, with BTS's Baebsae and Seo's Saidae Yugam. And in 2017, BTS covered one of Seo's 1995 songs called Come Back Home. Now, although I didn't fully appreciate the connection between these two groups in the specific context of the chapter, I did appreciate the background and focus on those who'd gone before BTS debuted, and I appreciated the focus on other pioneers in the industry who did things differently in much the same way that BTS does now. I was not familiar with Seo Taiji and Boys, and I very much appreciate the authors mentioning them and comparing them with BTS, because it's easy to see BTS as a pioneer and forget that they had their own pioneers that went on before them. So I always like attention to groups like that and people like that. This section ends with some quick references to the charitable efforts of BTS, supporting social causes like the US-based Black Lives Matter. There's a reference to other K-pop groups being known for charity as well, but BTS seems to take it to a completely different level. And they've established, quote, social responsibility as core to their identity, end quote. And they seem to find a way to be involved with social causes while avoiding, quote, specific political interpretation, end quote. In part, because they tend to support things that everyone around the world would want to support, things like mental health awareness and humanitarian relief. That's an interesting issue to talk about, especially with this cultural ambassador status that BTS has. You know, to avoid, especially if you're trying to be active socially, to avoid the political connections, political controversies that could go with that. That's a minefield, I'm sure. The next section is entitled Defining Cultural Ambassador. Now, some formal ambassador roles are mentioned first in this section, like BTS serving as honorary tourism ambassador for Seoul in 2020. But this chapter focuses on how the group has mainly functioned as informal, unofficial ambassadors in a cultural manner. Now keep in mind, this content does predate barely this official presidential envoy status they are enjoying now. But so the focus is on the unofficial, informal role they've been filling for quite some time. The section starts by exploring, quote, intangible power resources and, quote, soft power assets, which would be in the culture and ideological realm. Three areas of Korea's soft power assets are listed. And the way I would explain this is the aspects of cultural sharing in a global way, Korean cultural sharing that have gone globally that have benefited Korea as a country include these three things. One would be the Korean diaspora, which is just a fancy way of saying Korean transplants who've migrated out of South Korea and have gone to, you know, the U.S., the U.K., other Western parts of the world, English-speaking, you know, as they've moved away from Korea, they have taken their Korean heritage, Korean culture with them and have influenced various parts of the world in a positive way, reflecting well on Korea. The second thing mentioned is traditional forms of art, crafts, and cuisine that have shared Korean culture globally. And then thirdly is popular culture, which is called the Korean Wave. And I believe this is the first reference in the chapter to Hallyu, capital Hallyu, which is another word for Korean Wave. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with that already. The next two paragraphs focus on, one, what is an ambassador, and two, what's meant by culture. Because, you know, there are two aspects to this cultural ambassadorship. The author states that the ambassadors basically represent, quote, the nation or a constituent state or institution, end quote. Ambassadors may function in a formal way or not, but either way, it involves someone or a group who, quote, embodies or promotes a defined and sanctioned set of values abroad, end quote. And there's the expectation that these values will, quote, represent the nation in a positive light, end quote, which will hopefully change the global perception of the country in such a positive way that it'll benefit the country somehow, whether it's political or financial, etc. So this part one, what is an ambassador? It involves a group or a person either traveling or in this internet world of ours, just sharing via the internet and the web, positive aspects of a country's culture that reflect well on the country and somehow benefit the country. Now, the part two aspect of this cultural ambassadorship involves culture. So the culture component requires first that a country has a well-defined culture to begin with. And obviously South Korea does. It's hard to share something if it's not well defined and something that's distinctive enough to be shared and appreciated by others. The author talks about how important it is for the work of a cultural ambassador to be public, which is obviously ideal for BTS, who is ultra public in every way imaginable. They're everywhere you turn, thanks to social media, but their art is very public too, involving videos, music, performance, concerts, all over the world, etc. And they appear at so many award shows and talk shows, etc., etc. They have messages that can be easily shared globally through their art. The author next attaches two words to BTS's cultural ambassadorship, and that's the word popular and informality. Unlike cultural exchanges from the middle of the 20th century, which involved things like sports, traveling, art exhibitions or exhibits, and U.S. actors or musicians enlisted by the government to travel and represent the U.S., and I appreciate that mention by the author, by the way, lest we think Korea and their strategic ways of sharing their culture with the world is not something other countries do. I appreciate the author mentioning the U.S. as being someone, a country that's done this quite a bit too. The author describes most of those approaches, those cultural exchange approaches from the middle of the 20th century, as top-down approaches to cultural ambassadorship. But so it would involve the government orchestrating it. But what BTS is doing is not top-down. It's not a government-initiated agenda. Instead, it's something generated from the private sector, which is a distinction that must be made in the case of BTS. And since that's the case, BTS's influence outside of Korea has, quote, largely occurred organically rather than as a governmental soft power initiative, end quote. In other words, since BTS's ambassadorship is informal instead of official, people don't perceive BTS as a tool being used by the Korean government. They freely represent themselves as having, quote, creative autonomy, end quote, all the while filling this ambassadorship role. Now, the last half of the chapter simply focuses on how BTS is covered in English language Western magazines, newspapers, and similar mediums. In other words, it seems to answer the question, what does BTS's cultural ambassadorship look like through the lens of newspapers like the New York Times and the Telegraph in the UK or various magazines, all of which are amply cited by the author? And she does offer some reflections on some of this material, but for the most part attempts to present it in an objective manner, just letting the data speak for itself. When did, generally speaking, Western traditional media start focusing heavily on BTS, separate and apart from K-pop in general? According to the author, it was around 2017. Here's a quote, coinciding with the group's EP, Love Yourself, Her, and their win of top social artist at the Billboard Music Awards, end quote. The next two large paragraphs focus on less than flattering presentations of BTS from the years approximately 2017 to 2018. And so the author has already mentioned, when did BTS start getting a lot of attention? It was 2017. But a lot of this early attention wasn't entirely positive. So these are the years that were, the couple of years right after they started getting a lot of focus. And after these paragraphs devoted on the not so positive. Thankfully, there are a few paragraphs after that that take a more positive direction, thankfully. But first, the less than positive portrayals. In general, according to the author, BTS is initially treated as mostly similar to their K-pop counterparts. In other words, they didn't view them as standing out that much in a distinct manner. And K-pop was considered then, in this 2017-2018 time period, as a, quote, highly standardized popular cultural product derived from established Western musics, particularly from the USA, and repackaged in glossy anodyne form, end quote. Now, I had to look up the word anodyne because I'm not familiar with it. That's the kind of word you'd find in this academic type work, but here's a definition of anodyne. It means not likely to provoke dissent or offense. It's inoffensive, often deliberately so. So we get the idea that this is a standardized popular culture product mimicking some US type forms, and it's just repackaged in this glossy, very inoffensive way. The author mentions two album reviews that appeared in the Guardian from 2018 and an article from the Daily Telegraph, and has three comments to make about the general sentiment shared in those three articles. And it has something to do with what we just read. One, the comments, quote, reveal an expectation that BTS's music should be identifiably Korean sounding beyond the use of the Korean language, end quote. And with that in mind, another observation the author makes is these articles seem to suggest that Western musicians are portrayed as innovators, while BTS is portrayed as imitators. So did you pick up on that distinction? And it's not flattering at all to BTS. Western musicians are portrayed in this time period from sources like the ones we mentioned as being innovators, while BTS is portrayed as imitators. So they're just imitating the innovation of Western musicians, which is not a positive thing at all. So, according to the author, BTS's music comes off as, quote, derivative and unoriginal, end quote. And also related, point three the author makes, BTS and K-pop as a whole is presented as, quote, formulaic rather than creative, end quote, which is also negative. The author mentions terms she found in these articles like formula and precision engineered perfection, which to her associate BTS with, quote, factory made products, suggesting a lack of creativity, originality, and agency, end quote. Generally not positive representations, to be sure. Even as the author describes in the next paragraph, the regular use in Western media of the word global to describe the reach and popularity of BTS outside of Korea. That's a term those same newspapers and magazines might rarely, if ever, use to describe the reach of a Western musician or a Western group whose reach is the exact same as BTS. So in other words, if BTS has a global reach, they'll use the term use a term like global to describe it. But they don't use those same terms to describe a Western group that is global. So in other words, this is an example of how BTS has been treated differently. Not in a horrible, sinister way, just differently. Now, the focus for the home stretch, that is the end portion of the chapter, is much more positive and affirming. And thankfully, the chapter ends this way. And I think this is what we'll, as fans, appreciate more, a whole lot more. The author here devotes four full paragraphs to more positive content she's observed in Western traditional media over these same years, roughly, I would say 2018, 2019. And although there's not a strong connection made between this positive content and BTS's role as cultural ambassador, it's fairly easy to connect the dots and assume the connection that's there. Namely, that with any positive commentary BTS receives in Western newspapers or magazines, it's evidence that their ambassadorship is being extended even further, and their positive representation of South Korea to the world is, in fact, a reality. Now, I love the way the author introduces this section with the phrase, refines or elevates the genre. And I want to explain what I think that means. And I think that the genre being referred to is not just K-pop, but pop music, I would think, globally. That some of the thoughts and content this author has found in newspapers, magazines, English-speaking, Western magazines, seems to suggest that when it comes to BTS, they have refined or elevated the genre of pop music. And so this is all good. The author starts by highlighting two particular aspects that show up in Western media: BTS's appearance and their performance. These are two things: appearance and performance. The appearance could involve their hairstyles, hair color, and their perfect complexions. These are all types of things that Western media outlets have written about over the years. And the performance would involve things like their, quote, millimeter perfect synchronicity, end quote, and the way their live shows involve a, quote, level of intensity and detail, end quote, hardly seen anywhere else. Those are things written about, highlighted a lot, magazines, newspapers, in, U.S. markets, U.K. markets, and the like. The author also mentions the phrase Korean Beatles, which has been used multiple times in Western media, seemingly to describe their revolutionary approach to their craft. A full paragraph in this section highlights the way the media, in a variety of ways, as they cover BTS, have, quote, shifted discourse away from K-pop's dark side. Some media content has noted the group's, quote, slightly more thoughtful tone when comparing BTS to K-pop in general. Others have noted the group's use of, quote, literary allusions to Jung, Orwell, Hesse, and Nietzsche, end quote, in their music. And also mentioned in Western media is the group's interest in fine art, particularly through events like the Connect BTS Global Art Project in 2020. Western media has also observed the, quote, creative freedoms BTS seems to possess, end quote, giving credit where I think it's due, and that's to Big Hit Entertainment for bucking the more controlled trends in K-pop. I want to read one quote here at the very end of this paragraph. I think it's a wonderful statement that true fans will appreciate. Quote, the group's perceived intellectual curiosity, creative autonomy, and camaraderie neatly refute prevailing criticisms of pop music, and of K-pop in particular, as a cynical and exploitive industry, end quote. In other words, the author is commenting that countless articles in newspapers, Western magazines are truly seeing the distinctive qualities, the special qualities of BTS, and they are simply observing what is reality, and that is BTS is different in all the right ways. And it's not just slight differences, it's major differences when you compare them to other musicians and groups in pop music in general and K-pop in particular. The author states that the most, quote, most prominent accolades for BTS, end quote, in the Western media pertain to their, quote, messages of self-love, tolerance, and acceptance, end quote. And there are a few sentences devoted to the group's mental health focus, which goes beyond just talking about it, even in terms of their own struggles with mental health and incorporating it into their music, all of which has been done by other musicians, and some mentioned in this chapter are Billie Eilish and Lady Gaga. But according to the author, BTS takes it one step further by concentrating on, I love this quote, role modeling positive behaviors and attitudes toward acceptance, end quote. Yet another way BTS is doing things differently than other groups. In the middle of all this content is an interesting observation about the dark side of K-pop, which is still there to this day and still addressed from time to time in Western media, even though BTS doesn't focus on it. And they could call out various practices more than they do, but they don't. They refrain from that. But the author feels like the positive message of BTS has a way of counterbalancing the, quote, negative portrayals of Korean society, end quote. And I think that's interesting and sounds very plausible, especially because of the amazing positivity of BTS and the extreme intensity of their influence combined with that. It's so intense that there's hardly any negativity it could not push back against in the K-pop world or maybe Korean culture in general. Now, the last paragraph in the chapter, not counting the conclusion, focuses on exactly what it should focus on, in my opinion. And that's the role ARMY plays in all of this. They hardly get any attention in this chapter till the very end. And here, there are multiple citations of Western media sources that have focused on ARMY and the social and political activism that's prevalent there. And it just seems to be such a fitting conclusion to all the talk about BTS's cultural ambassadorship. Because without the support of ARMY, would BTS even be in a position that would allow for ambassador roles or status? I'm not so sure that they would. It's as if BTS together with ARMY is the true ambassador, an all-in-one package, so to speak. Although I have to say, ARMY is way too global to be considered a Korean cultural commodity. So it's understandable why ARMY isn't mentioned more in the chapter. Now I'd like to read the very last sentence from the conclusion, which would be the very end of the chapter essay. I just feel like it's a perfect conclusion to a chapter like this that looks to the future, at least slightly. And it reads as follows. It remains to be seen how and whether BTS will sustain the balancing act required of the cultural ambassador. On one side, representing national and commercial interests, and on the other, maintaining their apparent creative independence and progressive, authentic image that has underwritten their success to date, end quote. Now, I love that because, like I said earlier, this author could not have known about this presidential envoy official status that BTS now enjoys. And so I think this concern or just question she raises here at the end is worth considering now. You know, with this official status they have now, I mean, I know as fans, we hope that nothing will change, that BTS will still be able to enjoy this, quote, creative independence and this authenticity that we so appreciate in the group. And I imagine it will continue. It's just hard to see even this official status really changing anything all that much. I just don't see BTS or HYBE allowing something like that to happen. It would just be so detrimental to their legacy and to their fandom, I believe. Overall, I so much appreciate this author's very thoughtful and focused look on this one aspect of BTS that's just not talked about much, not nearly as much in the other books we've looked at, that I've looked at in the past, this cultural ambassadorship aspect. I look forward so much to looking at other chapters from this book, other essays. There's some really good content to work with there. You'll have to look forward to that as well. That is all I have for this episode. As always, if you would like to support me in any way, please turn your attention, if possible, to a group that deserves your support way more than I could ever. And that's an organization that was founded in 1988 called Books for Africa. You can learn about them through their awesome website at booksforafrica.org. Give them a chance. See, read the stories, see the pictures, learn about them. If you like what you've read, consider supporting them in some way. It doesn't take much. If you do support them, I would like to hear about it. It would be an encouragement to me when it comes to continuing with this podcast. Send me an email about it at btsbythebook@gmail.com. You can use that email address to send me any questions, make comments.